Hello and welcome to the world-famous Driving You Crazy podcast. This is the show where we talk about all things transportation, anything that gets you from here to there. I'm the traffic anchor and the transportation reporter for Denver 7 News, Jason Luber. If for any reason you would like to contact me, you sure can. The phone number is 303-832-0217, or of course you can find me on any of the contact links in the description of this show. I first must say that I am recording this on the day of the Baltimore bridge collapse, the Key Bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore that collapsed after a cargo ship hit it. And it was just, that's what we covered all morning long. And it was just, it's just devastating. It's just, just watching the video, it takes your breath away how destructive that one impact was. And if you watch closely any of the videos of the ship as it gets closer and closer to the main support there for the bridge, you could see how the lights on the boat go out, and then they come back, and then they go out again. You can see some smoke coming from the engine, it looks like, or from the exhaust. So it looks, it's thick black smoke. So they obviously had some kind of a power engine failure a couple of times, lost the ability to control the ship, and it, with its momentum, and I don't know how the tide was going, whether it was going in or out, but with the movement of the tides and the current, it drove the ship right into that main support and brought the bridge down. And so it's just a tragic situation, and I'm sure they'll find, maybe I'll talk to somebody in Baltimore about it next episode or after that. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. But I also want to mention, what a trip. As I mentioned in the last episode, my family took a trip to Ireland so my daughters could march in the St. Patrick's Day parade in Dublin. And I want to take you through some of the more interesting parts of the adventure, especially some of the transportation differences that I experienced firsthand, because I love seeing how different places, different not only cities, but also now countries, deal with transportation and getting people around from here to there. But I have to start with my anxiety, because leading up to the day of the trip, we were seeing a predicted snowstorm, a big one. Here in Denver, we get most of our major snowstorms in March, and they're big. We're talking a foot of snow kind of snowstorms. Most of our big snows are in the spring, in March and April, the snowiest months. And the first weather model runs, I was looking at it for when it was a week or so out, was forecasted 20 inches. And yes, that is possible, 20 inches. And actually some places after the storm in our foothills got well more than that, got over 3 feet. And as we got closer to our day to fly, I feared that the flight would be canceled. And the forecast was snow to start on Wednesday night. Our flight was going to go on Thursday afternoon. And the snow was supposed to start Wednesday night, continue through most of Thursday, early morning, and then go until maybe midday. Our flight was scheduled on British Airways at 6:20 Denver time. Now, I originally talked Thursday off work, but I agreed to come in to work since the snowstorm was so big, and it was I volunteered to come, you know, take my day off and come into work and help out. So I get up at 2:00 and I race to the computer first thing, because I wanted to see if my flight was canceled, and yes, it was canceled. Now, I didn't know what to do. I except just call British Airways and see what my options were, but they don't have a local number until like an 800 number until later on in the day. So I had to call a number in London for British Airways. So I don't know what that's going to cost me. So I get on the phone and I'm asking the person on the other end of the line what I can do. And after about 3 or 4 minutes, the guy says, well, we've already rebooked you on a United flight for the same day and the same time. I was stunned. And that plane, they told me, was coming from Los Angeles to Denver, and it was going to be like arrive in Denver around 2:00, and then we're supposed to be flying to London at 6:30. So thinking that the plane that was supposed to take me originally, the British Airways plane, was going to land at 4:30 and then go leave at 6:30, I thought, well, if that one's canceled, how is this plane, United plane from Los Angeles, going to fly from there in the snowstorm to land at Denver at 2:00 in the afternoon? How is that going to happen? So I was a little skeptical and I didn't know what to do. So first I had to dig a foot of snow off my driveway before I could leave to work. because, you know, I still had to work that morning, and I was nervous that the flight from LA was just not going to make it. The entire time that I was covering this, the terrible road conditions and all the snow that morning, I was anxiously watching that flight and wanting to make sure that it took off for Denver and that it wasn't going to be canceled, because then I really wouldn't have known what to do. It would have sent everything off into a really bad tailspin. So I left I did my morning shift over there at the TV station, and then I left for home after the morning show, after the snow coverage, and I got stuck actually in some high snow getting off the highway. It wasn't that bad. I was able to get out of it. But look, we got a foot and a half of snow at my house. It was a lot of snow. A foot and a half is a lot of snow. Now, the first thing I do when I run in the door, hi, everybody, I'm going to go check the computer for that LA flight. And amazingly, it was up and on its way to Denver. Great news. So we're moving in the house, all the family, as if we are going to be going to London, as if that United plane is going to land here safely, not be diverted. Everything's going to be fine. And we're going to get on that plane and we're going to head off to London just like we thought we were going to. What I was watching also with the forecast is there was not nearly as much snow at the airport where that is compared to where I am at a higher elevation. They had maybe 4 inches out there at Denver International. So it was basically operations running normally. And there were a lot of flight cancellations, including my original British Airways flight. But the United flight, the pilot said, hey, let's just go. And I'm glad they did. Because then when we get to the airport, I have some nervous excitement. We get through security. We get to the gate. And everything's still on time. Everything is still. And then they start boarding. And then I'm like, finally. Now, they did say we're going to have to be de-icing, and that took about 45 minutes. But hey, I was at that point, I didn't care. We were on the plane, we were getting de-iced, and we were heading for the runway and heading for London. It was a stunning turn of developments for me. My emotions were running high and low, and our seats were right there in the front of economy. So I bought economy seats, and that's where they booked me. And they sit right in front of the bulkhead. So the seat's just behind the business class. So basically right behind a wall. And then so we were the first seat. So it was good that no one was in front of us to put their whole seat back and crush me. But it was bad because I couldn't keep my backpack with me. It wasn't super comfy. We had the tray table was in my armrest, as was this monitor, you know, the TV or the monitor that you're going to watch some shows or movies or whatever on. That was right there in my armrest. So it wasn't the greatest comfy seat, but hey, it was fine. I didn't care as long as the seat was in a plane that was heading to London when we wanted to head to London. So that was the greatest part of the trip right there. So off we go, and we're in the air, and everything's just great. And by the way, on international flights, the drinks are complimentary. And yes, you can have just about as many as you want. I just had a wine and a shot with dinner. My dinner gave me some heartburn. Maybe it was the quinoa salad. I don't know. I tried it. The texture was terrible. The flavor was fine, but I just couldn't get through that. I tried to sleep, but it's never easy to sleep on an airplane unless you have one of those cool seats that they had in the front of the airplane that you could. It's like your little pod where you can lay back and you have your. It's almost like being in a little bed. Now, I don't know how I would fit in there because I'm 6'2 and 230, and so I'm a pretty big guy. I don't know how I would have fit in there. I'm sure my kids and my wife would have fit in there perfectly, but I think those seats are like $3,000 or $4,000. What I paid, I'm sure one of those seats at that price is probably what I paid for the entire round trip back and forth. But I bought a couple of neck pillows before the trip. And this other contraption, I don't know if you ever see it. You have to look it up. I don't even know what it's called. But you actually blow it up and you hug this thing. It has holes in it and it has this hole for your face that you can put yourself in. I mean, it's a pretty big contraption. It's like as big as your chest. And you basically hug it. But it didn't work as expected because, again, my tray was in my armrest and you couldn't really use that as a platform. And I think that's what you need to be like in within seats to butt it up against the back seat and then also against your tray. And then it could be a little bit more comfy. So it didn't work for me. I didn't really get any sleep. So basically when we landed, I was up for 25 hours since I was up at 2 a.m. and we landed at 9:30 a.m. in London time. And there's a 6-hour time difference. So it was 9, 8, 7, 6543. Yeah, 3 a.m. So I was basically up for 25 hours when we landed. They did give us a little breakfast sandwich, like an egg McMuffin. It wasn't great. It was fine. It was nice to have something when we landed. But thankfully, we arrived. And that was all that really mattered. We were there. And we were in the same terminal. So originally, we flew to Heathrow Airport. It is a huge airport. They have four terminal buildings, and you have to take a train in between them. And it's still tricky to take the train. So it's always good to be in the same terminal as your connections. And thankfully, we did. We landed at Terminal 2. Our flight to Dublin was in Terminal 2. And so we went through the automatic passport machines, or at least tried to. My wife and my youngest daughter got through. And then I was waiting. I was behind my older daughter. And the machine kicked her out. It didn't say, it said, no, you're no good. You have to go in one of the guys. So fine, I walked with her to one of the guys. And that worked fine. Welcome to the UK. All right. So then we get to the main terminal, check in for our Aer Lingus short flight, an hour flight from Dublin, London to Dublin. Go through the security, just like TSA, just fine. It's very similar. It's not quite as rigid, I would say, as the TSA here in the United States. But it is very similar. They give you the tray. You have to put all your stuff in the tray, and then you send it through the X-ray, and you got to take your belt off. They were really adamant about that. Still had to take your shoes off. Even though I have pre-check, it doesn't work overseas. You still have to do all your same stuff. So very familiar, and then so off we go. Get to the Dublin airport, pass through customs, no problem. Give you the stamp, boom. Welcome to enjoy your time at the parade, and get into Dublin, which was really cool. They actually had a waiting bus, so we're on this tour, so they had a bus that was waiting to pick us up, get into the bus, and then off to the hotel. And because it was a package deal, our rooms are already selected for us. So we get to the lobby, and the representative for this tour gives us two keys. Well, one key is for my kids' room, and they were on the first floor, right near the lobby. And then they gave us the keys for our room, which was on the fifth floor on the very opposite side of the... I mean, we could not have been on more opposite sides of the hotel from our kids. And it was... I guess that was okay. I mean, I would have preferred we were right next to each other. But we worked it out. It was just fine. But we had to... Because we had to do a quick turnaround, jump back up on the bus to get to downtown because we had tickets, tour tickets for the Guinness Factory. And look, if you ever get a good chance to go to Dublin, and a lot of people want to go to the Guinness storehouse, I think is what they call it, the factory tour, it's this big building. They built it just for tourists. They have a big tourist gift shop right in the bottom, and it's a self-guided tour. It's really not that great. And they do have a couple of bars in there, obviously. One on the very top where they have, it's all windows, and it's circular. And so you can see all of London, and that's where you get your free Guinness. And the people, I'm not kidding, drink Guinness like water over there all the time. It's all Guinness all the time. And it really is like water to them, I think. It was fine. Ate dinner there, but we were also tired. We just wanted to get back to the hotel room and crash. But one very interesting aspect about walking on some of the streets when we were dropped off from the bus on walking in some of the streets there in downtown Dublin, Our people are walking on the right like we drive in the United States, right? But they drive on the left. I would think that you would walk on the left like you drive on the left in the UK and in Ireland. But they walked on the right, even though they drive on the left. That kind of confused me. Okay, so that was the end of Friday. So the next day, breakfast, Saturday, at the hotel was packed. Apparently there was a band that came from Alabama, the Homewood Patriots from Birmingham. They had 350 people or so on this trip, and that wasn't their entire band. They had seven buses carrying them around. And breakfast in Ireland is a little bit different than breakfast here if you're staying at the Holiday Inn Express. Look, they had these runny scrambled eggs. The bacon, they called it bacon, but it's not really bacon. It's more like a piece of cured ham. And it wasn't that great. There was a weird flavor to it. And then they had these Irish, they call them black puddings. They look like a little mini muffin. And as I found out later, after I tried it, it's a traditional breakfast food. There was a light one and a dark one. And the light one is made from pork fat, blood, and sometimes oatmeal or barley. The darker one was made with ox blood. And I tried it and it was awful. It just didn't have a good texture to it or a good flavor. One of the other people in our group had one. This guy goes, It was a little bit odd. I said, was it gamey? That's what I thought. And he goes, yeah, that was right. Felt pretty gamey. So we had an ox blood pudding thing. anyway, so that's Saturday. We're jumping on a tour bus. Supposed to have a little sightseeing tour, a couple hours on the bus, driving through Dublin. Drove through the town a little bit, dropped off downtown, walked around. And had dinner, and then we were supposed to go back to the bus. We did get into this fun tea house for lunch. We made it down to the famous Temple Bar. It was mobbed full of people everywhere. It was almost scary how crowded it is with so many drunk kids in there. But if you look up Temple Bar live cam, you'll see an Earth cam with where the Temple Bar is there in Dublin. And you'll see everybody. It's always mobbed in there. But what I noticed about the roadways while we were driving around is that the lanes seem more narrow than here in the United States. And all the vehicles, there weren't a lot of, I never saw a Chevy Suburban. I never saw a big, really big pickup trucks. It was all pretty small, regular sedans driving through there. The biggest cars were like not even an SUV. It's more of a, well, because I think of bigger vehicles like an SUV. I'm thinking like a Nissan Rogue or an Audi. You know, like a four door Audi that's a little bit bigger. That's kind of like an SUV. You know what I mean? But not a sedan, but just a little bit bigger. That's what most people were driving. And there were a lot more pieces of information written on the road surface, like speed limits, arrows for turning. There's bus stops where the bus stops are. Crosswalks have a lot more lines and designs on the road, painted on the road, and it really let you as a driver know that people might be there. It was really a better visual clue. I like that a lot. They don't deal with snow plows there so much, so scraping the roadway really isn't a concern for them. It is like it is for much of the United States. So the markings obviously would last longer. It's an easier idea, but there's so many places in the United States, half the country has to deal with snow, that it maybe isn't so practical to write the speed limit numbers on the roadways. Also, the traffic lights, they're on little poles right there on the side of the interchanges or right next to you. They're not hanging across the roadway on a wire or a gigantic pole, anything like that. So it's not up. It's right there at your eye level. And it was a lot easier to see, I thought. And approaching the area where there's either pedestrians or an intersection, the lanes become a little crooked, like a zigzag shape. I'm sure it's there to alert you that this area is just different than a regular lane. Maybe slow down because there could be people there or there's an intersection there or something. So they have these zigzagged alternating lines rather than just a regular straight line. And they did, at least in Dublin, had some several pedestrian-only streets where you can just walk down the middle of the road, no cars there, and that was nice. I think a lot of cities are starting to do more of that. Oh, and there was this interesting thing. So there's this tunnel on the east side of Dublin near the airport, and to control speeding, they had a problem with speeding in the tunnel. They used something called your average speed. So unlike a traditional speed detection, like photo radar, which takes your speed at one particular point along the road, these average speed cameras monitor your average speed between two points. So it takes a picture of your car and your license plate at the beginning of this zone, and then it takes a picture of the picture of your license plate and your car when you exit the zone, and it calculates how long it took you to travel between those two points, and that's how they get your average speed. And if you're over the average speed, they will send you in the mail a ticket and with the fine and everything. And the fines are pretty steep for speeding in Ireland, so the system apparently is working pretty well to control it. They also have this system on some of their highways. One of them was on the M7 motorway, And they were set about 9 kilometers apart. So you probably forget that you're in the zone. And now get this: the non-compliance rate for speeding, where they put these cameras up before they were turned on, it was 32%. So basically, a third of the people driving in this zone were speeding. Now, after the system went live, the compliance rate soared to 96%. So basically, only 4% of drivers were caught speeding. 32% were speeding before, 4% after. I would say that's a success. And any driver detected of speeding or sent a ticket for speeding by one of these average speed cameras. Now, the speed limit in that zone was 120 kilometers or 75 miles an hour. So it's not like they're trying to get you at 55. And if you are caught speeding, you get you receive 3 penalty points on your license and a fine of 160 euros or about $173. So it's pretty steep. It's not like a $25 fine for going a little bit over the speed limit. I mean, that's a pretty hefty fine. So, and then if you don't pay it within 56 days, so basically 2 months, you have to go to court. So, 75 is pretty good. So if you're going 80, then obviously that's speeding. And they say that they have reduced speeding issues and it has made the road safer and they have fewer crashes, especially fatal crashes with this system in place. And I've always said, if you want to stop poor driving behavior, you need more enforcement, whether that be human enforcement or in this case, automated enforcement. Now I'm conflicted because I don't like cameras watching me, but I also realize that there's a significant speeding problem in the United States. This is an interesting idea that I think could be looked at, in states, cities. If I were in a legislature, if I was a politician, yeah, I would definitely look at this and see if it was something that would work in our town or our state, and see if it would reduce it. Because speeding is out of hand right now, and there are fewer officers to go out there and enforce it. And so I think it's actually a pretty interesting idea. Also interesting, a story from one of our travel guides. I was asking about license plates because I was looking, most of the plates are white, but then I saw some yellow ones. And he said the Ireland license plates are the white ones and the yellow ones are from the UK, but that includes Northern Ireland. And there's no border to drive between Northern Ireland and Ireland. It's just, you just drive between them like you do drive between Missouri and Kansas. I mean, you just drive right across state lines like you drive across Northern Ireland and Ireland. But an interesting point is that it can be dangerous for people from the Republic of Ireland or, Ireland, to take your vehicle going up to Northern Ireland. From what I was told, the previous tensions between the two sides. And the guide said, and he was very Irish. Between all of his stories, he was basically saying that everything good in the entire history of the world has come from Ireland. But so he's defending Ireland in a lot of ways. But he said he was nearly run off the road twice up there in Northern Ireland with his license plates. And there are places he said you don't go when you have Ireland, Ireland, Republic of Ireland license plates on your car, because your car could be damaged or stolen or wrecked or whatever because of those previous tensions with Northern Ireland. So the tensions, I guess, are still alive and well. Anyway, so Sunday was parade day. Had to get up early. Breakfast was short. A little practice for the girls. There were 53 kids, baton twirlers, marching in the parade. Two of them were mine. And the kids got on their own bus. There was a separate bus just for the performers going down to the parade. They left at 9, then we left at 9:30. And my wife and I paid for grandstand tickets because it was we didn't understand where you're going to stand or on most parades. If you don't get down there early enough, you're never going to get right up to the front to be able to see your kid who's in a parade that you would want to take pictures and video of, right? So we bit the bullet, paid $100 or whatever it was for the grandstand tickets each, and we got to this the O'Connell Bridge. So O'Connell is the major boulevard there in downtown Dublin, and the O'Connell Bridge goes over the river, the major river Liffey, and right there before the TV viewing area. So our seats we actually got seats on the very front row on the street. So they were perfect. I was like waiting for my girls to come on down. So overall, the parade was underwhelming. There were some military people first, some fire people, the bagpipes were, some guys playing the bagpipes, some strange floats Saw some this one guy who was like looked like the Pope walking around. We saw a seagull. There was a float of seagulls. The president of Ireland's dog was in the parade. He actually randomly, as the parade stopped, came up to me and I got to pet the dog for a bit. I didn't know at the time he was a president's dog until he left and someone said, "Hey, you were petting the president's dog." I'm like, "Hey, that's cool. Nice that the president let his dog enter the parade." So then anyway, here comes the Alabama band that was staying at our hotel and they're huge. And then my girls. And there they are marching in the parade, doing their baton twirling. They did great. They looked like they were having a great time. I took a whole bunch of pictures and videos, and it was great. But as soon as they left, we had to split before the parade was even over because we were supposed to get back to the bus. So as soon as the girls got through the parade, they were going to get on their bus, and everybody was going to drive to Killarney. And Killarney is on the southwest side of Ireland. We're talking like a four-hour bus ride away. So they wanted to get on the buses as soon as possible. So we didn't get to see the end of the parade. I had to watch it on YouTube. And so we bust out of there, and we all get to the buses, and everybody's on the bus. Everybody's on the road. And we stopped there about 45 minutes. There's this gas station place that's also a food court. I don't know what best to describe it. I don't think we have anything like that around here. But maybe a half a dozen or so restaurants in there. And while we were waiting for the bus with the kids to show up, we were about, I don't know, 20 or 25 minutes ahead of them. I was talking to some random Irishman next to me, and I could only understand maybe a third of what he was talking about. We were talking about some Irish politics. It sounded like he was actually running for some kind of political seat in Ireland. And he was talking about the government life and life there in general. And it was just tough to have a really meaningful conversation because of the thick accent. I mean, I could pick up a few words and enough to go, "Oh yeah, okay, uh-huh." And then chime in, and it sounded like I knew what he was talking about. So that was fun. But anyway, we had a quick bite. Anyway, back onto the bus to Killarney. And arrive at 7 o'clock at night, had a really good buffet dinner. And by the way, they do, honestly, drink Guinness like water. Everywhere you go, you get Guinness for dinner. It's like drinking beer and whiskey is very normal for everybody there with nearly every meal. Lots of smoking. A lot of people were smoking, way more than in the United States. Lots and lots of smokers, which was a little surprising to me too. So that was Sunday, and the next day, Monday, it was a cold and rainy, drizzly, very windy day. The parade day was, they said it was the best weather they've seen in 50 years. It was great. It was like in the low 50s and broken skies, and so a little bit of sun, little clouds. It was just perfect for the parade day, but it was not so perfect for the next day with gale force winds, and we were set to drive around the Ring of Kerry. Now, the Ring of Kerry is a loop that goes from Killarney, this little Irish town, along the coast, the southwestern coast of Ireland, on these narrow, two-lane, windy, hilly roads, and we're in a 55-passenger large motor coach. It was not the best of times. In fact, on one of the other buses, there was a lady who had a reversal of fortune, projectile, if you know what I mean, style in the back of the bus. So they had to deal with that mess. And since St. Patrick's Day is a national holiday in Ireland, and since it was on a Sunday, that means let's say Christmas was on a Sunday, they make Monday the company holiday, right? We call it company holidays, but they call it a bank holiday. So over there, most of the stores were closed on that Monday. Only a few restaurants were open. So we were only able to stop a couple of times. We got out one time in this one little town, and we got wet, and it was windy, and our umbrella basically flipped upside down, backwards, you know, and I had to figure out how to fix it. And most of the shops were closed. It was just 7 hours of a way too long tour. I think if we had good weather, it would have been nice. It was fine, but it was just I was ready to get off of that bus after a while. That night, we found a nice little traditional Irish restaurant for dinner in town. It was called Murphy's. Many of the meals they have in Ireland are served or comprised of root vegetables, potatoes, carrots, onions, things like that. One time, they actually served me these little round potatoes, like finger potatoes, with mashed potatoes. So I had my mashed potatoes with my finger potatoes. And I think I either had a Guinness stew or fish and chips and Guinness for every single meal except breakfast. they're big into the Guinness stew. Stew is everywhere. It's like pot roast in a bowl, basically, with the potatoes and the carrots and the onions and the chunks of meat. So the next day, so this is now Tuesday, we headed back to towards Dublin, but we stopped at the Blarney Castle. Now that was really cool. Big place. They have a big gardens and grounds. It's really neat. But you have to wait in line. When you get to the castle, you wait in line. Everybody wants to go to the top of the castle to kiss the Blarney Stone. So when you get there, when you get to the top there at the Blarney Stone, you have to lay on your back. So they have this pad, and you lay on your back, and you have to scoot yourself, kind of contort yourself on your back, and throw your head farther back, like all the way from your waist, to kiss the stone that's actually hanging over this gap in the rocks there of the castle. That's big enough for a person to slide down, and then you would fall like 150 feet to the ground. Now, they do have a couple of bars there that keep people, I'm sure, from plummeting to their death. But you get down there, and you try to contort yourself, and I got close enough to the stone, and I just kissed the air. See, the Irish guide was telling us that the lore is, if you kiss the stone, it's going to give you the gift of gab. As you can tell, I already have that. So, and if you kiss it and you already have it, it's going to take your gift away. So that's why I just kissed the air in front of the stone and didn't actually kiss the stone. Anyway, I thought that was a really cool place. The girls did a little show out there in the grass, and a few people stopped and watched, and it was pretty nice. And then a 3-hour ride back up to Dublin, and then a traditional Irish dinner show with the dancing, Irish dancing, and a little 3-piece Irish band playing some music, and again, more stew and more root vegetables and more Guinness. And I'm not sure if I'm ready to have another Guinness in all my life. I almost, as a prank, was at the grocery store the other day, and because my daughters were asking if they sell Guinness in the United States, and I said, sure, they do. And they have it at the grocery. You go, do they have it in our grocery store? I said, yeah, they do. And so I almost, as a prank, bought one and brought it home for me. They said, Dad, you can't have any more Guinness. I said, okay. But that was the Ireland part of our trip. I saw, I think, everything that I would ever want to see in Ireland. I enjoyed my time there. So at this point, I'm good. I don't think I need to come back to Dublin again. It was great. I just want to see something else. But then we headed back to London for a couple of days. No problem with that flight. Actually loaded the plane from the tarmac. And in the back of the plane, they had everybody go out to the tarmac, and you took the stairs, like the president, up to the front door, like you normally would off the jetway. Or we did off the back, and actually went up the stairs to the back of the plane and entered there by where the bathrooms are. It was fine. It was a little strange. We were sitting in the back of the plane, so it all worked out fine. But in London, my wife bought these tickets. It was for this red bus tour. It was called the Hop On and Off Bus. And actually, I think there's a couple of them. Anyway, you could take it for as long as you wanted. You get out. So you get on the bus. You get out at these different stops. You see what you want to see. And then you get back on the next bus, and it takes you to another stop. And you can get out and go look at the castle or the parliament or Big Ben, you know, all these different things, right? It took us past Tower Bridge. That was when we went actually on this the River Thames. So you part of that tour allowed us to get on this boat and this boat, the one-way boat from the Tower Bridge. That's the one that looks like you would think London Bridge, right? Because actually London Bridge just looks like a regular bridge. It's pretty boring, actually. So when you're seeing London bridges falling down, it's a pretty boring bridge to fall down. But Tower Bridge, I think, is what people think of when they think of London Bridge, but it's actually called Tower Bridge. Anyway, so the boat took us from there over past the big Ferris wheel thing. And then we stopped by Big Ben, and it actually stopped right there at noon. So we could hear Big Bell ring 12 times. It was really cool. Saw all the sights of London. I thought, you know, the palace, the Kensington Palace, and the Parliament Building, and all the other things. It was pretty neat. We rode a bunch of trains, right? Because we rode a train from the airport to the city. And they're really big into using your credit card with the touchless payment, or using your phone with the touchless payment instead of using transit cards or cash. So you've seen the turnstiles, right? I'm just about any place you go to do transit or get on a train. You can still buy a ticket with cash, but they really encourage you to use your phone. So you go to this the turnstile there, and there's a yellow dial, and you just hold your phone up to it, and you tap it or with your credit card, and then it lets you in. And it knows exactly where you started. So you're charged by where you end. So when you go through the train, wherever you're going, and you get out of the station, and to get out of the station, you have to do the same thing. You have to tap your credit card, the same credit card you used, or your phone, and then it knows where you started, where you ended, and that's how it charges you for that ride. We bought, before going, I bought these Oyster cards, which are supposed to be the same thing, but they didn't work out as well as I thought, because you don't know how much you're charged on that thing and how much it costs from person to person. And it was cheaper for the kids, so it was better for us to buy actually individual tickets for the kids anyway, that was a bit of a pain. It was easy to get around from place to place. We did ride one day in rush hour, and it was jammed solid. I was 100% jammed solid. It was Thursday evening. We were on the train, and it was just jammed solid, wall-to-wall people. And the roads, I think, in London are a lot smaller than here in the United States. And their roads are a lot different, too, because they're more windy, a little bit not quite hilly. But the city is, you know, how many thousands of years old? It's just a long time. So it was just these trails that then become roads that then you try to drive on. It's just so the lanes are narrow. A lot of city buses, a lot of them, the big, tall, red, double-decker buses, and they were everywhere. The drivers must have nerves of steel because they are driving really fast past people, and people are running out in front of the, because there's a lot of tourists there. Oh, yeah, and the streets, they don't have street signs like here in the United States. You'll see a street sign on the corner. They actually put the street sign on a building right there, so you have to look at the building to see what street you're on. But maybe people already know, or they use their GPS, whatever. But they also had all the street markings on the road. That really helped out. They have some congestion pricing areas, and I've talked about this in the past. And I didn't see a whole lot of private traffic, vehicle traffic, as you would in the United States. And I think mostly due to parking restrictions, because there were a lot of parking restrictions, and I think the parking costs a lot of money there in downtown London. And the time it takes to navigate the city. So it's really, and of course the congestion pricing in certain areas. So those factors have really reduced the amount of traffic. Now there was still some traffic because we had to take a cab from one place to the hotel to we saw Wicked the show the musical Wednesday night when we got to London. So we just took a cab. It was easier for us to do that. So there is some traffic and congestion in downtown London. It's just, I don't think as bad because of what they've done with the parking restrictions and the congestion pricing and that sort of things. It would just really reduce some of the public or the private vehicles that are in downtown London. It was larger. The city was larger than I expected it to be. I would definitely go back in a heartbeat. We only got to see part of the city. There's a lot more to see. I wanted to go see Prime Meridian, where time basically starts, right? I didn't get to see the Abbey Road crossing for the Beatles. I didn't get to see the traffic light tree. I really wanted to see that, but maybe next time, I guess. And I think part of the enjoyment of being on a major trip like that to a part of the world you have never seen is that you survive it. See, I'm a planner to a fault sometimes. I really envy people who can just throw a few things into a bag and then go and be fine for a month. I need a little bit more structure than that. Not a ton more, but I do need some more. I like to have a decent idea about what we're doing for the day just so you don't waste it. I think part of that is that I was traveling with my family. If it was just me, I guess I could just throw a caution to the wind and let come what comes. And maybe some of it is just, if it was just me and my wife, maybe I would do the same thing. But when you involve children and you have the whole family, I think it's best to have a little bit of structure. And I really wanted to be more of a free spirit and go with the flow. But I think it's easier when you're single or just married with a spouse who has the same idea as you do rather than having kids with you, too. And that's why for my 50th birthday, we didn't go to Cuba, which we could have a cruise. We were talking about maybe going a cruise to Cuba or going to Scotland, play golf, something like that. Because we had two younger children at the time, all they want to do is go to the beach. So that's what we did. Got on a cruise boat and we went to the beach instead of what I thought would be something more interesting, educational, something on my bucket list, you know, like playing St. Andrews, something like that, visiting Havana. So we decided to take a trip on the world's largest cruise ship, and we had a happy family. I'm not saying that I wasn't happy doing doing that. It was great. I'm telling you, it was a great trip, but I would have been very happy and fulfilled doing the other adventures too that I thought I would have liked to do at the time. Anyway, sometimes in your life, you push back experiences that you want to do because it's better for others than yourself. And that's just part of life and part of being in a family. Because, you know, I know days aren't guaranteed. So it's a gamble whether I'll be able to get to do those things and see Prime Meridian ever. But I hope I have some more time left, and we'll be. And that's the way it is. Anyway, if you have any Ireland or London experience stories and you'd like to drop me a note, it'd be even better if you called the listener hotline, and I'll play your comments on the show. 303-832-0217 is the number. It's also in the description of this show. Thanks again for being here. Thanks for listening. And until next time, I'm Jason Luber, the traffic guy. Be safe, and as always, happy motoring.